Welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast. We're just now 2 weeks away from opening day. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and you can follow me on Twitter at BobbyFantasyPro. Just a quick reminder, we're still doing our MVP upgrade giveaway. All you have to do to enter the drawing is subscribe and leave us a rating on iTunes. Then shot screen that to me at BobbyFantasyPro on Twitter. For today's show, I'm joined by Derek Carty of ESPN.com, and you can find his premium daily projection tool, which is awesome. It's the bat at rotogrinders.com. Derek's on Twitter at Derek Carty, just how it sounds. Hey, Derek.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
It's going great. I'm getting really excited about baseball, and March Madness right now is awesome. I'm not sure if you're much of a basketball guy. I know you're really into the baseball, though.
Yeah, I like March Madness. I don't know it as well as I do baseball, but it's always a lot of fun.
So, Derek, you won the Labor NL Only League. For those of you who don't know, that's one of the expert leagues, and Derek won by a whopping 11.5 points last season. Tell us how you managed that one, Derek.
Yeah, it was a runaway, which was surprising because I spent a lot of money on Clayton Kershaw, and I lost him for a month and a half, and I still managed to pull it off. It was kind of just, in those leagues, they're so deep that injuries kill you, because if a guy gets injured, there's no one to replace him with on the waiver wire. I managed to do well with injuries, and I managed to find a lot of good cheap value guys, especially on the pitching side, to make up for when Kershaw got hurt. Like, I got Drew Pomeranz for like $2. I got Kyle Hendricks for like $8.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so it was a good year.
Okay, so, and Derek, you just completed the Labor NL Only draft for this year. What's it like at these things? Is everyone all serious? Are people talking trash, or is it just another draft where friends are hanging out and y'all just happen to be experts?
So it's a little bit of a mixture of all that. I mean, people take it seriously because, you know, it is an expert league and we're held to a certain standard. But at the same time, we're all good friends. So there is a lot of trash talk going on. And there is kind of, you know, a lot of just good natured fun. Like, it's more than just the draft. Like, it's one of the best weekends of the year. And everyone says it because we get to go to Arizona for a weekend. We get to watch baseball. We get to talk about baseball, draft our teams, and hang out with people who have the same level of passion that we do. So it's always a lot of fun.
That sounds incredible. What's it like during the season? I mean, is there just as much trading, free agent activity, or is it kind of like a lot of our listener leagues where last place teams kind of tune out after the All-Star break?
Nobody tunes out because you don't want to have the reputation as, you know, in the industry as the guy who tunes out. So, I mean, everyone continues to try. There's not as much trading maybe as in your typical home league, but it's still everyone's involved.
Now, do you have like a main rival in these things, or someone that you really want to beat?
Yeah, well, this year it was Dalton Del Don from Yahoo. It didn't matter what player I wanted. It did not matter. He wanted him to, and he would bid any crazy amount more than I would to get the guy.
That's awesome. We're having
it
him on the show
so
tomorrow.
It was so infuriating. Oh my God, tell him I hate his guts.
I will. We're doing a hot takes episode, so it should be a lot of fun to begin with, and I'll make sure and pass the message on. So you've competed in mixed leagues, obviously, but when you're prepping for one of these NL-only leagues or an AL-only league, how should your strategy change?
I mean, in general, I think the best strategy to approach any draft is to draft for value. Find the guys that the room undervalues and take them at a discount. And that's, you know, pretty much applicable no matter what kind of league you're playing in. In an NL or AL-only league, sometimes I think people misjudge value where, like, you know, guys who are a couple dollars in an AL or NL only league, like, you won't go near in a mixed league, but they can still turn in, you know, you can get a guy for $2 who's going to give you $6 or $7 worth of value. So, I mean, sometimes people, they get too caught up on, you know, they need a guy with this many home runs or even, you know, this many plate appearances, but a guy who gets 300 plate appearances can still be really valuable in this kind of league.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, replacement level players are so much different in these deeper leagues. I mean, I saw you guys are drafting like all kinds of backup catchers and everything. Do you put an extra premium on these positions, catcher, shortstop, second base, where it's harder to get players who can actually produce?
Catcher, I think you can put a little bit of a premium on, but especially in a deep league like an AL or an NL only league, I mean, replacement level first base or replacement level shortstop are pretty much the same. You know, it's a guy who's going to be projected for, you know, 100 plate appearances without really excelling in anyone's skill. So replacement level doesn't seem to matter as much in these really deep leagues because once you get that deep, everyone is just kind of garbage.
That makes sense. Now, there was one manager who came in with an extreme strategy. Yeah, I guess as he does every season. Derek, you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, you're talking about Doug Dennis.
Doug Dennis of Baseball HQ spent just 30 of his 260 bucks on pitchers. How's this worked for him in the past?
It's worked pretty well for him. I mean, most years he's in contention. He's won it, a couple times. He's finished second and third a few times. So it's a kind of strategy where you don't have a lot of margin for error. But if he can load up on offense and doesn't sustain any injuries, and he can, you know, take home most of the top offensive points, and he can turn in a pitching staff that, you know, finishes really well in ERA and WHIP. And hopefully, I think a big part of the strategy for him is hoping that he can hit on a closer or two, so he can get either middle of the pack in saves or, you know, upper tier in saves. Then he can, you know, contend and he can potentially win the thing. But it's a really interesting strategy, and one that you really need to have a lot of discipline to pull off successfully.
I love hearing about all these unique strategies and seeing if maybe one of them can work in my leagues. It's really risky, but it's just fun to see what people come up with, especially some of the experts in these leagues. Now, I want to take a look at a few guys from your roster. You ended up with Clayton Kershaw again. He won the league for you last year. Why not bring him back? But you spent a whopping 44 bucks on him. Were you willing to go 46 if someone topped your bid?
Absolutely not. I didn't even think I was going to go 44. But like when I threw him out there, everyone knows that I like Kershaw now. So like in the weeks leading up to the draft, I'd hear people on the radio or on their podcast, or they'd come up to me in person and be like, "We're not going to let you get Kershaw for cheap this year." And I'm like, "Guys, no. Like this year he has like this back injury. Like he's still phenomenal, but he's not the slam dunk he's been in past years. I'm not going to pay as much for him." And I basically gave a speech to that effect at the start of the draft before I threw him out. And nobody believed me.
Well, the thing is, you didn't get him for cheap last year either. 38 bucks is a big old price. But I'll tell you what, I think this year, $44 might be cheap for him. Because if you look at what he was doing last year, he was on pace to break the all-time WHIP record. It was his best ERA of his career. He was going to strike out 290 guys again. I mean, this is one of the best pitchers of all time. And in an NL-only league that's that deep, you just can't find that kind of talent.
I'm glad you appreciate how good he is, because most people don't appreciate how good he is. They talk about, like, you know, the top tier of aces, and, you know, it's like, so is Max Scherzer, and so is Chris Sale, and so is, you know, Justin Verlander. And it's like, no, the top tier of pitchers is Clayton Kershaw, and that's it. It's Clayton Kershaw, a huge gap, and then whoever you think number two is. Like, it's not even close. Like,
that's exactly right.
The difference between Kershaw and number two is like the difference between number two and number 50. Like it's that stark and he's that good.
You're not exaggerating at all. I think he's the single most underrated player in baseball. I compare him kind of to Gronk as a tight end. I mean, you think about Rob Gronkowski, and he's far and away the best tight end. You would put him in tier one by himself, and there is no tier two. There's no tier two. You have to move all the way to tier three when you're getting a Max Scherzer. And he's got a lot of concerns, so I'm not so sure about him. So I don't mind getting Clayton Kershaw in the second or third pick in my draft.
Yeah, I don't either. I think Kershaw, assuming he can stay healthy, which this year I am concerned a little about the back injury. I am.
You have to be.
But assuming he's healthy, he might be the most valuable player in all of baseball.
Agreed. Now, Rich Hill is also a player that I've been hyping all preseason. Some people were surprised he was bid into the 20s, and, you know, he had a bidding war with him. Was that also Del Don, by the way?
Of course it was. Everyone I overpaid for was Dalton Del Don. Every single one.
You know, if there's one player to get in a bidding war over, to me, I think it is Rich Hill, because if he is healthy, you might win your league because of him. We're talking about the second best pitcher in baseball when he's been healthy over the past two seasons, 2.00 ERA. Third best is all the way down at 2.76. He's striking out over 10 hitters per nine innings. So if you get him and Clayton Kershaw rolling, you're going to win again, Derek.
Yeah, here's the thing about Rich Hill. When Rich Hill is healthy, he is a top five starting pitcher in all of baseball, given his context now. Because for a couple of years, like once he kind of had his little resurgence, like he was with Boston and he was with Oakland, both in the American League, Boston with an extreme hitter's park, Oakland with a terrible defense behind him. Now he's in the National League. He's in Dodger Stadium. He's throwing to the best pitch framing catchers in baseball. Like, his context cannot be any better. And he's so good to begin with. He strikes out so many guys. So, I mean, the health is far from assured, but he's so good when he's healthy.
And he has so little usage on his arm that it's basically like he's 29 or 30 years old, right? So I'm not so worried about him being ancient like he is.
That's a nice way to look at it.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a little too optimistic on him because I've been hyping him all preseason. But I'm a big believer. I have Rich Hill on every single team this year.
Yeah, I love him. If he gets hurt, it's a lot of money to spend. It was more than I was planning on spending on him. But The pitching in the NL this year, like, it thins out so quickly. Like, I don't know if you've done an NL draft, but it gets so ugly.
Yeah, it really does. And that's why I was excited to see that you also grabbed another high upside pitcher, Tyler Glasnow. I love to grab like 6 high upside pitchers and just know that 3 or 4 of them are going to turn out and be really good. And so what about the others? I mean, you drop them and such is life. You've got a bunch of closers and middle relievers to help out with the ratios. But if you can get 3 of these high upside guys that turn out, you're in the money for sure. And Tyler Glasnow is one of these kids that I think is going to be great. He's had some control issues, but he has a dynamic arm, really unique release point. I mean, he's 6'8". He has this big, long stride. It's kind of like he's throwing from a little league mound almost. I'm a big believer in him this season. What do you think he's going to get fantasy owners in 2017?
So I really like Glasnow. This offseason, I've developed a system to quantify pitcher stuff. And Glasnow stuff is just like off the charts. Like and it matches what scouts say about him. Like, his stuff is phenomenal. He has control issues. You know, he probably won't open the season in the starting rotation, but in a deep NL-only league, you don't necessarily need 200 innings out of a guy like this. If I can get 125 or 150 really good innings out of him, then that's going to be more than enough. And he's another guy who has good context. He pitches in a pitcher's park. He throws to a really good catcher in Francisco Cervelli. So I really like Glasnow.
Now, one player that I wasn't so sure about that you added, I know NL-only leagues are a lot deeper, but I was surprised to see you went $10 on Ryan Zimmerman. Maybe there's something I'm missing about him. Can you explain your thoughts to us?
I'm not happy about having Ryan Zimmerman, but he is kind of the type of guy that I tend to roster in these leagues. Like, if you notice, okay, I pay the same for Nick Markakis. Like, they're boring guys. You're not expecting anything huge out of them. The upside isn't there. Even with Zimmerman, you know, he doesn't have the floor Markakis does, but he's, you know, he's a solid contributor, and first base thins out very quickly. And this year, it seemed like in labor, everyone was paying a premium for power. So at the time, I had very little power. I didn't have a first baseman. You know, I thought Zimmerman was maybe like a $13 player, and he stopped at 10. So I wound up with him. But it was just, you know, I wasn't planning on it, but I also wasn't really upset about it either.
Yeah, I mean, looking at some of these other guys that went for $10, I can see why you went 10 on Zimmerman, but I was trying to find some player that I wasn't so sure about, and he was the one that stood out to me. One really interesting addition you had, Yasiel Puig. There's a lot of Dodgers on this team. Are you a Dodgers fan, or do you just happen to get a ton of them?
I just happen to get a lot of Dodgers, especially on the pitching side. Like I talked about before with Rich Hill, like the context for them, the National League, Dodger Stadium, Yasmani Grandal and Austin Barnes. Like it's great context for Dodgers pitching. Puig was more because nobody likes Puig. And I think
I love him.
He's one of those guys that people undervalue. Like they see that he's had his issues either on the field or off the field. He's had injury issues. You know, he's a hothead or whatever. But like the skills are there. The skills are there. I think the opportunity is there for him this year. And for that price, you just can't pass it up. I thought he was the biggest bargain of the whole draft.
He was definitely one of them, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm not really so sure that he's as good for fantasy teams as he is for an MLB team because he's got that great arm. Mm-hmm. He's a very good base runner. But I'm buying his new stance. In September, it looked like it was a real breakout. And I think he can hit for some power, maybe 15, 20, 25 home runs. He's going to swipe some bags. He's going to get plenty runs because he gets on base. I thought it was a real nice price.
Well, I'm glad you thought so. I did too.
Okay, now we got to take a break away from this to mention our sponsor for today's show, TeamStake.com. If you're tired of hassling friends and family for your fantasy league entry fees, just go ahead and try TeamStake. TeamStake provides fantasy sports leagues with a fully customizable payment collection and payout distribution system at no charge. The best part of it is that it's free, it's secure. I got my hands on it. The interface is great. I love everything about it. You'll love it too. Please support the sponsor of today's show, TeamStake.com, and run your finances through them this season for free. All right, now back on over, moving off your roster, Derek. I want to talk about Carlos Martinez and a few others. I cannot believe Carlos Martinez went for $24. And I'm a Cardinals fan. Was everyone in the room as surprised as me? I mean, maybe I'm missing something on him. I get it. He throws 100, but he's just not going to strike out enough guys.
Yeah, it's hard to know who in the room is surprised because, like, when a player gets picked, it's not like we're sitting around the table, like, heckling each other and saying what a terrible pick it was. I mean, if we were, I'm sure I would have heard it about Rich Hill. But, like, I was surprised. I was expecting Martinez to stop at, like, 15, 16, maybe 17. And then he just kept going. And I'm like, okay, like, I mean,
that's Martinez, like the same price as Steven Strasburg.
Yeah, like it might have just partially been like auction dynamics. Like he came out a lot later than guys like Strasburg. But I don't know. It seemed way too high to me.
Yeah, it was the guy who got him waited a really long time. I was listening in. He waited a really long time to get his first piece. And then he was like, I got to spend all this money somewhere, I guess. So,
and sometimes that's just how it goes. So guys go for higher than you expect them to just because that's what it is. Guys have to spend money.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, the next guy, another Dodgers player. It's kind of funny to me that like half the people in this podcast are Dodgers players. It's not by design, but there's just some interesting pieces here. Jock Peterson. A lot of people don't know what to make out of him. 40 home run upside, 190 batting average downside, maybe even both. What do you see in him this year, Derek?
I think both of those things are realistic possibilities. I'm a Peterson fan. I had him on my team last year. It might have been Tout Wars instead of Labor. I don't know. This year, it seemed like he was going for much more like even value. You know, he's a guy who people are going to be scared of because of that downside. He's a guy that some people are going to be too high on because of that big upside. And I think the most realistic situation is right there in the middle. I think he's a guy who's probably going to hit maybe 230 or 240 with 30 home runs and, you know, deliver $20 worth of value in an NL league.
I'll tell you what, I'll take 230 any day. I'll take 210 with 40 home runs in an NL only league. And, man, he was much better in the second half. He does get on base quite a bit. He's going to get some runs. He'll swipe some bags. Like you said, the great power potential with RBIs, that all big time makes up for the batting average as far as I'm concerned. So even in mixed leagues, I don't mind adding him there in the 15th, 16th round because he's got some nice upside and maybe he will just hit 260. You never know.
It's always possible. I mean, batting average can fluctuate so much. His skills cannot change at all, and he could hit 260. I mean, it's not impossible.
I mean, if Rick Porcello can put up these terrible peripheral numbers and post a 310 ERA with 21 wins, then yeah, Jock Peterson can bat 280.
I'm glad that you're not buying into Porcello either.
He's horrible. he's not horrible. I mean, he won the AL Cy Young Award, right? But if you look at his underlying stats, they were worse than they were the year before when his ERA was up near 5 when he had all the bad luck. But I'm just not buying that it was some breakout. I think he's going to be, as he's been throughout his career, 12, 13 wins, 4.2 ERA, right?
That's about what I think. I got into some pretty heavy debate about him when I was at the ESPN Summit last week with some of the guys there. Like, it seems like there are some believers, but I don't see it. His peripherals aren't that good. His, you know, like his home run per fly ball and his BABIP or whatever, like he doesn't have an established record of beating those the way some guys like maybe Marco Estrada can do. And he pitches in such a bad environment. Like he pitches in Fenway Park. It's the second best hitter's park in all of baseball. So I don't see how he's going to repeat this year or come anywhere close to it.
I mentioned this on one of the previous podcasts. So the Red Sox had one of the best offenses in baseball. And even Rick Porcello's run support was a full 2 runs higher than the standard starting pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. He just had so much luck on his side. He's going to come crashing back down to earth. I don't want any part of him. Not at all.
No, me either. Especially not at the prices he's going at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can get Rich Hill for that price.
Oh, I'll take Rich Hill any day.
Oh, yeah, I'd take Rich Hill for twice the price. Now back on over to the National League. I know Eduardo Nunez was an all-star last season from a terrible team, mind you, but I'm not seeing fantasy value in a guy who seems unlikely to come anywhere close to repeating his 2016 season. I mean, he's 30 years old now. He's in a much worse ballpark. I don't think he's going to steal anywhere close to 40 bags this year. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Eduardo Nunez is a guy that I like. I loved him when he was with Minnesota. Then when he got traded, I started to like him less. Like, I don't trust Bruce Bochy to manage him properly. Like when he got traded to the Giants, like he was being hit like on days he played even. Like there were days he wasn't playing at all. And then on days he played, he'd hit like 7th or 8th. And it's like
And
please.
It's not a very good lineup.
No, it's not a very good lineup. Like I just don't trust that he's going to be put in the situations that he needs to be put in to put up the kind of value that you want out of him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like Scott Pianowski was saying on the show yesterday. He's one of these guys that when he was on the Twins, they're not going to win. Just give him the green light and he'll steal 40 bags. You go to a contender like the San Francisco Giants, you're not going to have the green light. He's probably going to steal 20, 25 bags. And I feel bad. Clinton, the producer, sitting in, he's a Giants fan. anytime I talk about a Giants player, it's always negative. They're all a little bit overhyped in fantasy, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good explanation for it. All I know is that I don't like Eduardo Nunez as a Giant.
he's sitting back there booing. If he had his mic unmuted, we'd probably be hearing it. He's right. Madison Bumgarner is definitely worth the price as far as I'm concerned. I mean, again, he's in the third tier behind Kershaw and then a blank tier, but Bumgarner's a real nice, consistent pitcher. I do like him.
He is. I like Bumgarner quite a bit. He's no Kershaw, but he's very good.
Now, there was no player in baseball who's left my head scratching as much as Justin Turner over the past few years. He bats 340 with seven bombs 3 years ago, then suddenly turns into a 27 home run hitter as a 31-year-old. Is this a fluke? Or are you buying it as legitimate?
No, I'm buying it as legitimate. I mean, he's the rare case where, you know, he was a guy who was like a quad A guy, always battling for like a bench spot. And then all of a sudden, he just gets good all of a sudden. But he's done it for long enough where I think we have to be buying into it. Like, he's a legitimately good hitter right now.
Is he the same to you as Daniel Murphy, or are you not buying Daniel Murphy? Because they're kind of alike in that way, where they just busted out and no one really saw it coming.
Yeah, Daniel Murphy at least had established himself as like a solid regular, whereas Turner, before his breakout, really hadn't done that. Murphy almost like elevated You're right. himself to another level. I think Murphy's the better player, and I'm mostly buying his breakout too. Not to the crazy extent, you know, he's not going to put up the same numbers as last year, but I do think Murphy has made some legitimate changes to his approach that kind of justifies some of his numbers from last year.
Now, Ryan Braun seems to be a player that no one's talking about. No one's really avoiding him. No one's thrilled to get him, but he batted 300 last year with 30 bombs and 15 stolen bases again. Should everyone be taking a closer look at him for their fantasy teams?
Ryan Braun is another one of these guys who he's getting older now. He's starting to become boring, and people just don't like boring. They would rather take a chance on the young guys, on, you know, the 40 home run upside of Jock Peterson, or, you know, there's just people don't like boring. But Ryan Braun is boring. He's stable and, you know, probably has some value, probably will come under value in certain leagues.
I like guys like this, like Adrian Beltre, Kyle Seager. You know exactly what you're going to get. Their batting average doesn't change from season to season. Their home runs, stolen bases don't change from season to season. They're always healthy. They always play. And, you know, I really like to grab upside in that round. So I've been all over Giancarlo Stanton and JD Martinez. But if for whatever reason those guys weren't there, Jonathan VR, yeah, I'd be taking Ryan Braun because you know what he's going to give you. And it's a real nice fantasy player. He's a good value as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. People undervalue being boring. They do. They don't like those types of guys. They don't think they're as valuable as they actually are. And you can take advantage of that.
There's something fun about drafting the guy that no one else was really that high on. He was your sleeper. And it's sexier to draft those guys, right? Because if you win with them, it makes you seem like you're a better fantasy baseball owner.
Yes. And I think that kind of psychological aspect of it has a lot to do with it. But if your goal is to win, if your goal at the end of the year is to win, you don't need those sexy guys, really. You need more guys like Ryan Braun, honestly.
Although Rich Hill is both sexy and really good and going to help you win. So it's a double whammy there, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers in the AL, too. Got to mention him on every podcast. I know this is an NL-only show, but I can't go without mentioning Lance McCullers. So there you guys go.
You hit on my guy, too. I love Lance McCullers. I was so upset I wasn't in him. I love him. All the guys at the ESPN Summit last week, they know I love McCullers now because I gave a presentation on this pitch stuff that I've been working on all winter. Lance McCullers has the best curveball in baseball, has probably the best stuff, raw stuff, of any starting pitcher in baseball. He's just like, I love Lance McCullers.
He is a perennial Cy Young contender in the making if he can get his control down, and it looks like it's headed that direction. He's still so young too, so we may not have seen the best of him.
Yeah, I would not be surprised one bit if he is the Cy Young winner this year. Not a single drop.
I think Yu Darvish is probably the front runner, at least in my mind, based on what he did coming back from surgery. I mean, I know Corey Kluber, Justin Verlander, and those guys are there, but Yu Darvish was, bar none, the best pitcher in the American League when he came back. Lance McCullers' upside, though, is right up there with Darvish. He could strike out 250.
Easily. He's so good. His stuff is amazing. His curveball is great. He throws it 50% of the time, and, you know, hitters aren't any the wiser to it. Like, it's just, he's so good.
By the way, I think that Adam Wainwright, if he was listening to this podcast, would probably fight you for saying that Lance McCullers has the best curveball in baseball. Because Adam Wainwright was talking on the radio, the local radio here in St. Louis the other day, about how he was just tossing the ball back and forth with his wife in the backyard. And then he threw a curveball to her and he said, it's back. His curveball, he says, is as good as it's ever been. And I know it wasn't there last season, because when you come back from surgery, you've got to refine yourself. And Wainwright says it's back. So I don't know. Maybe he comes back big time this season.
I'll be curious to see then, because I mean, you know, it used to be good by reputation and from what scouts said and, you know, looking at it. But the past couple of years, it's been fine, but it hasn't been elite. If it's back this year, I'd be curious to see it. It's tough, though, because as guys get older, their stuff diminishes. Like, it's what happens. So
I'll believe it when I see it.
I'm with you.
Let's close this out with a prospect that's really turning some heads. And then I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you for a couple sleepers. Cody Bellinger has plus power. He has a plus hit tool. Do you think he's maybe worth stashing on your bench, especially in these NL-only leagues, until he gets called up? Or is that just too far in the distance for you?
No, it's definitely worth a bench stash. I don't necessarily see the Dodgers benching Adrian Gonzalez for him this year, unless Adrian Gonzalez is just dreadful. But, you know, that's not impossible. And it's certainly not impossible to see Adrian Gonzalez get hurt. And then if that happens, then I think maybe Bellinger gets the call. And he certainly has talent.
He could play some outfield, too, if any of those guys go down. I know they have a lot of depth in their outfield, but Cody Bellinger is such a great bat. I think they're going to have a hard time keeping him out of the lineup, maybe even as early as May.
Yeah, it's tough to tell with these young guys where they're going to fit in with their teams, when we're going to see them in the majors. But I do think Bellinger is probably one of the better stashes on the hitting side in the NL this year.
Now, before I let you run, Derek, I've got to ask you for two sleepers that you're wanting to get in all your leagues. You know, Lance McCullers, I don't think he quite qualifies as a sleeper. So guys being drafted a little bit after Lance McCullers, who are two guys that you really like?
I mean, I was going to say McCullers and Rich Hill, because I think both are Cy Young caliber pitchers that you can get for a cheaper
price. I need to have you back on the show every day if you agree with me this much. This is awesome.
Yeah, so if we want to go deeper, let me think. I like Robert Gsellman, not as a Cy Young guy like Hill or McCullers, but he's one of these guys that I foresee being a boring pitcher for years to come. And when I say boring, it's very much a compliment to these guys. Like, I think Gsellman's probably like going to post like a 3.70 ERA this year, and you can get him for really cheap unless you're drafting in the National League with Dalton Deldon, because then he's going to drive him up to $10 and you're going to want to rip your hair out. But in a normal league, you can get him for like a dollar.
That's awesome. Well, Derek, that's all the questions we have for you on today's show. It was a lot of fun having you on. I am so happy that you love Lance McCullers and Rich Hill. It's going to work out for both of us this season. And all the people who were thinking in their minds that you spent $20 on Rich Hill and were crazy, they're going to be proved wrong again. I like your team a lot. It was fun chatting with you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And for those of you guys listening at home, we've got one more show coming up this week with Derek Carty's rival, Dalton Del Don of Yahoo.com. We're going to tell him that Derek Carty hates his guts tomorrow, and we're going to talk about hot takes. It's going to be a great episode, so make sure to tune in for that one. Subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.